This podcast is part of the Telerik Developer Network. Telerik by Progress. Hello and welcome to Eat Sleep Code, the official Telerik podcast.
And welcome to Cross-Cutting Concerns podcast.
I'm your host, Ed Charbonneau, and...
I'm your host, Matt Groves.
So today we're doing a little crossover episode. We're both here at Star Trek. We thought it'd be fun to do a little dual interview slash crossover podcast recording, right?
That's right. And we're going to try to interview each other about some cool stuff that we're up to, and maybe talk about Star Trek if we have time to.
Absolutely. Star Trek's been a fun event. You've probably heard other shows that have recorded about what sessions people are giving, and this will be yet another one. So, Matt, what are you here at Star Trek talking about today?
So, my session was about chaos and how we would deal with chaos in our web applications by using a distributed database. And what would happen if one of those nodes of the database goes down or is split from the network. And so I have to talk a lot about CAP theorem in that theorem that applies to distributed databases. And what about yourself? What are you up to?
So I'm here at the event doing some speaking on .NET. So I'm talking about all of the changes that have happened in the ASP.NET core space over the course of it being called ASP.NET vNext up until today, where it's called ASP.NET Core 1.1. So there's a lot of changes in that category. It's a very fast-paced talk. I will probably be losing my voice by the end of the day today.
I peeked in on your session, and I couldn't find a seat. It was wall-to-wall, packed house there. So very interesting topic at Star Trek.
People are trying to get up to speed. Hopefully what they've done is buried their head in the sand for the last 2 years and just tried to ignore all the churn and noise that's happened. And that's not as a slight to anybody that's worked on the product. It's amazing. It's just the growing pains of what you need to do when you're building something of that scale and of that severity of change. I mean, we're talking about going from Microsoft-only product to... one that runs cross-platform and is a big framework that's rewritten from the ground up. And a lot of new ideas were introduced. Some didn't make it, and some did. So, again, it's not a slight at anybody of any shape or form, but there was a lot of painful changes throughout that process. So I kind of try to keep everybody up to speed as to what actually did make it, make sure I include enough tidbits about what didn't make it, in case you encounter that kind of project in the wild where somebody may have been an early adopter or something and then left the company or whatever, and you open up this ASP.NET core project and you find a project.json file and kind of don't know what that is and where it came from.
These are the sorts of things that used to happen behind closed doors at Microsoft, but now they're being more open and we're seeing the results of that. And we're also seeing similar things happening with Angular, Angular 2 and Angular 4. Lots of growing pains, lots of changes happening there. I've been asking a lot of my guests on my show what they think of all the JavaScript frameworks out there. You're doing a lot of stuff with Angular these days, is that right?
That's right. When we talk about Angular, there's AngularJS, which is Angular 1.x. The Angular you're referring to, they like to call just Angular now. So this was Angular 2. They released a new version, they skipped, and they went straight to Angular 4. So Angular 3... you're not going to find a release for that. Now we have Angular 4. So that adds a lot of confusion. And again, it reminds me a lot of what's happening in the .NET core space. So a lot of similar things happen there where we have ASP.NET MVC, which was version 3, 4, and then 5. And we were expecting ASP.NET core to be MVC 6, and they decided to reversion that as 1. So we're counting 3, 4, 5, 1, and then with Angular, we're doing 1, 2, 4. So you know, you start combining these technologies together in a single application, which is very plausible. Things get confusing really, really quick.
Seems like people are having trouble counting. We went from Windows 8 to Windows 10, Angular 2 to Angular 4, and so on. So it doesn't help when you're trying to Google these things after the fact.
Yeah, but to answer your question more straightforward, Angular is very popular. What used to be more of an MVC pattern is now more of an MVVM pattern, or model view model pattern. So if you're coming from a .NET development background and you've done XAML applications or Silverlight, that type of programming framework and design pattern might be very familiar to you. So, you know, you're doing a lot of configuration versus doing convention. It's built upon TypeScript, which is yet another Microsoft frameworks, or language rather. It's a pre-compiled JavaScript language. So you write TypeScript, you compile it to JavaScript, and you get a lot more advanced features like typing and proper classes and things that you just don't have in JavaScript. The Google team adopted a Microsoft technology to build Angular, which is very interesting.
Definitely. And Anders, I'm going to butcher his last name, Anders H., let's say, who worked on C-sharp, is also working on TypeScript. So you definitely see a lot of C-sharp influence on that TypeScript language.
There's a few things that if you can mentally map the syntax in your head, they blend very easily together. So you can learn very quickly, if you're a C-sharp developer, the basics of TypeScript. There's just a few small things, like, for example, I believe, I'm trying to code in my head here, so don't shoot me if I'm wrong. Declaring like a class as public in C-sharp, a similar thing would be to export in TypeScript. So once you learn those few little syntactical things, it's pretty easy to pick up on.
The whole thing you just said with MVVM and XAML, that's where Angular really started to click for me, is when I started thinking of it more like the web forms or XAML approach. And then it started to feel a lot more familiar to me than trying to approach it from, oh, this was an MVC framework and now it's sort of changed and I'm a little confused. So that is a very good analogy, I think.
The other things that I've been working on along with, it kind of fits into these things because those are the front-end technologies, at least .NET Core you can use as a front-end technology, and also the server layer as well in this scenario. But I always did full-stack development as a developer. It's kind of like the lone wolf. And I see the trend of machine learning picking up on in being very big contender in the software development stack. I've been exploring how difficult that technology is to learn as a human being and implement in that full stack. So for example, if you wanted to add a feature to your application to maybe predict whether somebody was going to pay off their loan or not, if they're filling out a credit form for a loan application, what does that UI look like and what process does that have to go through to get to the machine learning algorithm? How is that machine learning algorithm built? If you're on a team that has a data scientist person and a machine learning expert, what does that mean for you as a developer? What terminology do you need to know to interact with these teammates? And I find that if you go through the process of what they have to do to build one of these things, then you can at least learn some of the terminology, learn some of their pain points, and then by doing that, be able to communicate better with them if you're going to have to interact in that scenario. So I've gone to Azure Machine Learning Studio and physically built a machine learning or a training experiment in their machine learning studio to do the credit prediction, and then learned how to attach a web API endpoint to it. And the next phase of this project is going to be to build the ASP.NET Core server component that will talk to it, and then furthermore front-end that with various Telerik UI technologies. So we have UI controls for ASP.NET Core, so we'll be using those. There's still a lot of developers out there that use web forms, so I'm going to give that a shot. We also have our brand new Angular UI called Kendo UI for Angular, and that is components that are built on native Angular, and they are components with no dependency on jQuery. So I'm going to try to front end it with that as well. So that's been a big ongoing project of mine. It's been a lot of learning. I'd never thought it was going to be easy, right? This is machine learning we're talking about in data science. Building something like that without peers to work with is very difficult because you can't validate yourself. So thankfully, I had some friends that had coworkers that they got me in touch with. After I built my project, they were able to validate that I actually did a good job. I'm looking forward to releasing all that content. We're slowly putting it up on developer.telerik.com as it's written. Looking forward to everybody being able to learn from that.
Cool. Sounds good. So I used a little bit of ASP.NET Core with my demo today. It didn't work out all that well. If you were here at StirTrek, you saw what went wrong. But the idea was I wanted to use a web application to demonstrate the CAP theorem a little bit with a NoSQL database. And I happen to use Couchbase, which is my employer. But this is the CAP theorem applies to distributed databases in general. And there is a guy, Eric Brewer, who did the original white paper on the CAP theorem. He also invented terms like acid and base. So if you're familiar with database world, you've heard these terms before. But the idea is that if you have a distributed database, you have multiple machines acting together as one database. But that introduces some problems because those databases need to connect to each other over a network. And what happens if the network partitions or one of those machines goes down or something happens to a part of the distributed database? And the CAP theorem governs what you can actually do in those situations. So the CAP theorem is an acronym. It's C for consistency, A for availability, and P for partition tolerance. The partition tolerance is kind of a given because if your distributed database is not partition tolerant, then it's not really a distributed database. You have to then design your database to favor either one or the other. So that's what the CAP theorem says, is that you can have those three attributes, but you can only guarantee to have two of them consistently all the time. And so just talk about what those mean. Consistency means that across your distributed database, there is only one copy of a piece of data, one recognized canonical copy of that piece of data, no matter what happens to the partition. On the other end of the spectrum, availability says you're always going to have the ability to read and write a piece of data, even if a node goes down or the partition is split, if the network partitions. And so just as an example, if I were using Couchbase, for instance, and I had three nodes and I create a document, that document lives on one of those nodes. And if that node goes down, I can no longer access that document. Whereas if I look at something like React or DynamoDB or Cassandra, something like that, that's on the other end of the spectrum. If that node goes down with that document, I'm still able to make writes to that document. So the database will still take those writes. But the trade-off there is, of course, if that node comes back up, then I'll have two conflicting sibling documents that I have to resolve somehow. And there are some ways to do that. These databases do address both of these concerns, right? So they both might sound dire, but the CAP theorem is really more of a spectrum in my mind. You know, Couchbase has one document on that one node, but we can compensate by saying, okay, the node is down. Let's fail it over. All those documents are now dead to me, and we'll take some replicas on other nodes and promote those to the active copy. So there's a period of time where you're not available, and this is consistent with the CAP theorem, that you don't have availability guaranteed all the time, but you do have a way to deal with that when the network partitions. And similarly, with the other end of the spectrum, if you have multiple documents that are siblings or in conflict, then you can have the database say, okay, we'll take the most recent document and we'll go with that one. Or the one with the latest revision, the highest revision number, we'll go with that one. Or you could allow a user to interact with it and say, okay, I will merge these documents by hand, like we do with source code. When we have to merge two branches together, there might be some conflicts. And so I was hoping to demonstrate that in the StirTrek session today. I wanted to demonstrate it in a very interesting way, but my Couchcase demo didn't cooperate, so I had to fall back to using a cluster inside Docker. And so I could shut down individual Docker containers, show the results on the screen, show how the database deals with it.
You actually have some custom hardware type of a rig that you've set up. Can we talk about that?
Yeah, I don't know if I'd go so far as to call custom hardware, but it's a selection of three tiny computers I wanted to put into a portable device so I could carry it around to conferences and user groups. And If I carry around three servers with me, that's going to be a little heavy and hard to carry around. So I wanted to get three tiny, and they're called Intel Compute Sticks. And they're meant for Netflix, really, is what they're meant for. They're not meant for running distributed database. So sometimes they don't cooperate that well. But I put those in a box. I put a router in the box. I connect them all together, get a power source, and then use some software to connect to that cluster and demonstrate the cap theorem.
So you have lots of wires, lots of computer components, lots of little black boxes jammed in a bigger black box that you have to travel with. That has to be fun.
And not only that, but I want you to picture the little box that this is in. It has a handle. It has a combination lock on the side. And it has the word freedom stamped on the side in large letters because it is a handgun case, which is the perfect size and has the padding for traveling. But yes, it is a little, might be suspicious. A guy walking through TSA with a handgun case full of wires and electronics.
All you're missing from that is a digital clock, and you are in a whole world of hurt.
So far, so good. I haven't been bothered by the TSA yet.
Yeah, till they hear this podcast, assuming they listen. With the cap theorem stuff, I think now that you've talked about it, it kind of refreshes my memory a little bit that I've actually seen some of this presented before. Now, this is something that you'd really want to test and intentionally break, right? So you'd want to get your solution set up to where you're happy with it, and then purposely pull one of the servers down and break it, right?
Absolutely. So as I mentioned, you can deal with some of these challenges on the server side, but there is a period of time where the kind of request you're making from your web application to the database may not return the results you expect. The document might be missing, there might be a read-only copy, there might be a conflict. And so you need to deal with that contingency, right? So your code needs to deal with that possibility. Even though hopefully your network is reliable, your servers are reliable, if you're running inside Azure or AWS or something, they're not going to come down very often. But you do have to plan for that eventuality that they might come down.
By planning for that, I mean, I've heard of people purposely inflicting, network outages or taking servers down to make sure that, nothing happens while this is going on.
Absolutely. So Netflix famously has the Chaos Monkey that just shuts down random machines. This is one of the ways you can deal with that Chaos Monkey is by having distributed data in a cluster or multiple clusters, perhaps. Maybe if for some crazy circumstance, the entire Amazon Eastern data center goes down, which we all know could never happen, you still have a backup in the Amazon Western data center that you can switch over to.
Awesome. So how have you enjoyed the event so far?
I've been going to StirTrek since the very first one. I may have missed one in there, but I love StirTrek. It's a great event put on by some really great people. They work very hard, and I enjoy this event immensely.
Same here. I think it's very well run. If it wasn't, I wouldn't be back year after year. I did miss the first year, but I've been here three consecutive years. I've got to enjoy a lot of excellent speakers, a lot of cool events, lots of great movies. We're usually treated to a Marvel Avengers movie. This year, we have Guardians of the Galaxy 2. I'm looking forward to watching it with everybody. And that experience in itself is different than just a normal movie experience, right? Because we're all geeks. We understand some of the nuances in the movie that your general audience doesn't. I've seen Captain America movies with normal people.
Normal people, he says.
I know. I'm going to get it for that one, right? The geeky people, like myself, when we see the cameo of Stan Lee pop up, there's a little more laughter than if you're with the general public audience, right?
Yeah. And there's just little details. And this conference is called StirTrek. They've shown the Star Trek movies a couple times. And I think the same holds true with that. If you're a Star Trek fan from way back, you understand what a red shirt means. So if they make reference to it in the movie, you absolutely know what's going on there. And so those sorts of bits of subtext and references to the source material or comic books in the case of Marvel movies, definitely something that this audience tends to appreciate more than others.
Yeah, it's an experience like no other. I've never been able to watch a movie with this many people that I've felt a connection to before. It's great.
Absolutely. Have you got to go in any sessions so far?
I have not. I've been too busy working. Progress, Telerik, we've been running a booth. So we've been talking to lots of amazing attendees, which is always great. We get to hear about lots of cool things that people are building and using our tools for, and there's always something that's new that I've never heard of before, and you're like, wow, I didn't know we could actually build something like that. We have people that integrate our stuff with F-sharp and all kinds of different ways of powering their UIs, and it's pretty amazing. But the only session I've gotten to attend is my own. Gotten to record. This will be the fifth podcast today.
Oh, my. So. This is my fourth, so I'm one behind. I'm going to have to catch up. But I do appreciate Telerik and Progress coming to sponsor Sturcek. Seems like whenever I go to a great event, you guys are there sponsoring. So I definitely appreciate that.
Well, thank you. Yeah, we enjoy coming out, talking to the community. We'd like to hear how you guys use our products right from the source, meet you in person. So that's why we come to a lot of these events. I think I've seen you at quite a few as well. So I know Couchbase guys like to get out and talk to the folks as well. We'll have some events coming up in the future as well. We will be at Codepalooza. We have some events we're getting on board for the fall, so I'd probably rather not say what they are yet, just in case the plans fall through. As we're recording, we are still pre-build, so Microsoft Build is coming up. This will probably air much after that event is over, so I'm looking forward to some of the announcements that come up at Build. We'll be there in person as well, so I hope we get to meet a lot of cool people there.
Any Build predictions?
I'm not inclined to say too many, so without any inside knowledge, I'd like to see some announcements around .NET and a solid schedule of what .NET Standard is going to be released on. We've heard some rumors about when, it may be in the fall or something like that, that it's official. I think those are not very much rumors exactly, but there's been like soft announcements, I think is more of a correct way of phrasing it. I think it was actually on MSDN. They said, expect it in the fall, but I'd like to see like a hard timeline come out on Standard 2 and, a real detailed outline of what APIs are going to be supported by that. And I'd like something to surprise me as well, right? We went into an event a couple of years ago, not understanding that something like the HoloLens was going to come out. I'm not saying another HoloLens should happen, but something to just, blow our minds would be cool. I'm ready for that. Since I've been working with Progress, I haven't been at a Build event where there's been like one of those huge things dropped on the audience. So I want to be part of that.
I'm hoping for some more Progress in the open source arena. So some of the things they've announced in the past, like SQL Server for Linux, have kind of really blown my mind. So a bash on Windows 10, for instance. So I'm hoping to see something along those lines at Build coming up.
Yeah, they've been open sourcing quite a bit of stuff. So we'll definitely see what they have to offer this time around. It's in Seattle this year, so I'm looking forward to going back to Seattle. I know that since it's in Seattle, there's going to be a lot of blue shirts there. I'll get to talk to some really awesome folks.
So listen to Eat Sleep Code podcast for some interviews with them, hopefully?
We definitely have some stuff lined up. There may or may not be some things already in the can that haven't been released yet.
Ooh, intriguing. And you can listen to my podcast. I'm not going to have a lot of blue shirts on in the future, I don't think, but crosscuttingconcerns.com.
What are some of like the past few guests you've had on? What are some of your favorites?
I had Sophie Wilson on an episode. I'm sure some of your listeners are familiar with her. She invented the ARM architecture and some cool things like that. I just like to meet people at conferences and try to have interesting conversations. And just happen to be microphones nearby. So I just did a couple here at Sturcek with Brett Whittington is one of them, one of the speakers here at Sturcek. And Charles Huseman, who I used to work with at consultant company here in Columbus. So it's great to get in touch with those guys.
So between Eat Sleep Code and Cross-Cutting Concerns, you probably will hear a good chunk of Sturcek speakers the reason for that is just because it's really awesome people that come and do this, and it's a great event. Thank you for coming on my show.
Yes, and thank you for being on Cross-Cutting Concerns. I always like to give my guests a chance to plug their contact info or their websites, things like that. So please go ahead.
You can find all of my info, podcasts, show notes, all that good stuff at developer.telerik.com. You can find me on Twitter at Ed Charbonneau, EdCharbenEAU. Where can we find your information, Matt, for our listeners?
So check out crosscuttingconcerns.com for my podcast. I'm also on Twitter, M Groves, that's GROVES. And please check out my blogs at blog.couchbase.com. Lots of cool stuff there, including some details about the cap theorem and the couch case I mentioned.
And we'll post all that in our show notes as well. Thank you again, and we'll have to meet up at some more events.
My guest today has been Ed Charbonneau. Thank you.
Thank you.